up. It's movie reviewing time.
Yeah, this is a good one.
I have been, actually, this is one of the first ones that I wrote on the list because this is one of my most beloved movies from childhood. Yeah. And it's honestly one that holds up. Like, I've seen it 40 million times, but I never get tired of it.
Yeah.
And it's Time After Time from 1979.
Yeah, I grew up with it too. It's a good flick. I haven't seen it in a few years, but you know this movie so well, you can go ahead and just kind of lead this.
I know, right? It's like
I remember the movie, though. Yeah, it was good.
It's funny because, and I actually wrote like kind of a big, long blog post about this, and I went into this a little bit on my blog, that I'm kind of glad that I was born at the time that I was born, and you too. Yeah. So you're only a couple years older than me, because kind of my formative years sort of coincided with, you know, cable TV,
yeah.
The home video boom, MTV, you know, the yeah. whole post-punk thing.
Yeah, that was our that was our internet for our generation.
Yeah, yeah. So what ended up happening was that for you children at home, I mean, when I was...
for you children.
When I was
yeah.
little,
yeah.
We only had three channels, yeah. and it was like a dial TV.
And then cable came.
Well, we had three channels, yeah. and then we had PBS.
Right.
And then later on, we got like a version of Fox 35, which mostly just showed like Sanford and Son reruns and yeah. Hanna-Barbera cartoons and shit like that.
Yeah.
But then in probably, I guess it was maybe 79, 80, yeah, I can't really remember. But my dad started working as an installer for yeah. Cablevision uh-huh. in Daytona Beach. And as one of the perks of the job, mm-hmm. he got all the channels free.
Wow.
So we didn't have to pay for cable.
Yeah.
And that included pay channels, which, you know, back yeah. then that would HBO and
yeah,
Cinemax.
Been a lot of money.
I don't know if they had Showtime then or not. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I definitely remember having HBO and Cinemax. And remember how the big deal was, because you didn't have like smart TV and shit like that. You had to have a box.
Yeah.
And the first box that we had was like this big, clunky, like faux wood
yeah.
box.
Like with, it was back in the
with
70s.
With like a little pointer
yeah.
on
Everything
the front that
brown.
Slid.
Yeah.
And it like lit up. And there
Even
was,
the old Atari was like wood, fake wood.
Yeah, yeah. It was yeah. like faux wood. And yeah. there was like, and there was numbers on it that were like, it was, I think it went up to 42 or 43.
Yeah.
And like that seemed like, wow, 42
yeah.
channels.
Yeah,
holy
right.
shit.
Yeah.
How are we ever going to watch any
yeah.
of that stuff? Well, it's like now, of course, we have like 3,000 channels
you can't watch
and we
them
never
all.
Watch it.
You can't watch them all and you don't care.
The only thing
yeah.
we ever watch on live TV is Walking Dead. But I said all that to say that because we got the pay channels for free, and the pay channels were not in a lot of homes at this point, they kind of had a lot of movies that I guess were cheap for them to get, and they would play them a lot. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like they would go, they would have a set of movies every month and they would put them in like heavy rotation.
Yeah, it's funny. And it did weird things to your mind when you were a kid. You'd watch the same movie over and over again. They would almost become like religious mantras.
Yeah.
And you kind of like would bond with a movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, that one's back on. Okay, let's watch that one. And you'd watch it over and over again.
Yeah.
You knew all the lines
yeah.
and everything. And then you'd hang out with your friends and you'd refer back to those movies. And like,
yeah.
Remember like what they said on The Shining? Or remember like what they said on, you know, blah, 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 blah? Yeah, yeah. You got to know the movies really well. So we didn't really grow up the way, say, millennials grew up.
Yeah.
We didn't grow up that way.
And I was going to say that, and that was actually the next thing I was going to say, was
yeah.
one of the movies they showed, I mean, a lot of them were sucky.
Yeah.
You know, I think I saw, like, the pirate movie and Grease 2, like,
yeah.
4,000 times because they just showed them over
and
over.
And then some of the sucky movies were actually, they sucked, but they were cool. You remembered them anyway, like Shockwaves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw Shockwaves a bunch of different times, which was about Nazi submarine zombies.
Yeah. But so I feel like, you know, even though some of the movies were shitty, I still have kind of like affection for them. Like I should say, even though
yeah.
like Grease 2, for example, is an objectively terrible movie.
Yeah.
Like I still like I saw it recently and I was kind of like, aw, it sucks,
yeah.
but aw. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Because I kind of grew up with it. However, the main movie that I saw and loved at this time period was Time After Time. And Time After Time is an objectively awesome movie.
Yeah, it's good.
And if anyone wants to argue that, I'll fight you because
yeah.
this is a good movie.
Oh, I forgot something though. Forgot to tell people that Patreon went back to normal.
Yeah, because we actually
yeah.
did, and we said this on our last on one of our last episodes, that there had been some, I guess Patreon announced that they were going to do some kind of change with the fee structure.
Yeah, we lost some subs.
And we lost a few patrons,
yeah.
you know, which is fine, and that's understandable. But we just got a message that Patreon has decided, our bad, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And some patrons really helped us out. Like, the ones that stayed with us, they increased the amount that they were sending us.
Yes, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, we ended up losing some patrons, but we actually made the same amount of money, actually.
Yeah.
And then one of them stopped using Patreon.
But went over to PayPal. Which is fine, too, because PayPal is fine.
I wish Patreon wouldn't do that kind of shit. If they need money, they should have taken it from us, not from them.
Yeah, that's what I figure. I don't mind. Like,
you don't mind a couple more percent.
No, no, no.
But they took it from them. I don't blame them for leaving.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And you know, Patreon almost became the next MySpace because evidently a bunch of people were leaving.
Yeah,
a bunch of people were leaving. I don't really blame them.
Like I said, props to Patreon. At least they made the announcement.
Yeah.
Everybody went no, and they were like, okay, we're not going
to. It's back to normal.
So yeah, apparently they're not going to roll out those changes. So you know,
right.
But like I said, if you still don't like Patreon, we have a PayPal account too. If you just want to do one-time support, that's totally fine.
Yeah, and there's a couple other services. Patreon is not a monopoly. There's a couple of them out there that we probably should use because there's some people that don't like Patreon.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go into
It's good to diversify, probably.
Yeah.
So we'll worry about that later. But you're going to hear this announcement over the next couple of videos, because we're going to do a bunch of videos at once. We're not really sure which one we're going to post next.
Yeah.
So don't get mad if you hear us say this like 3 times.
But anyway, okay, so time after time, like I said, objectively good movie. Now, if you have not seen it, you really should, because I feel like this is kind of one of the most underrated movies of the 70s.
It was a sleeper.
Yeah, it doesn't really come up a lot. And the only reason I saw it was because it was on the pay channel so much. And it's actually, what kind of movie is it? It's kind of hard to classify.
It's an adventure movie, I think.
I guess it's a sci-fi adventure.
Yeah.
But it also has some romantic comedy elements.
Yeah.
And it also has some horror, like slasher elements a little bit, too. And it's actually, it was based on a novel, but the interesting thing is that the novel was not finished at the time the movie was made. What ended up happening was that the director, Nicholas Meyer, this was actually his first movie, and he was actually friends with this guy, Carl Alexander. And Carl Alexander had written about 50, 60 pages of a novel, of this novel, and gave it to Nicholas Meyer and said, "What do you think about this? Critique it." And Nicholas Meyer's like, "This is a cool-ass story. Can I option it?" And the dude's like, "Okay, it's not done, but okay." So he optioned the idea and then went on and made the movie. Now, the novel did come out later. I'm not real sure how similar it is. But the whole premise of the movie, and I love this kind of...
Yeah, and this makes this movie, this premise.
I love this premise,
yeah.
Because I love the idea of, like, historical figures, like, put in context where they're not necessarily...
H.G. Wells makes a time machine in the 1800s.
1893. The movie is set in 1893, the beginning
of
this.
That's the premise of the movie. And he comes into our time. Well, 70s.
Well, yeah, he comes into the contemporary time when the movie was made. And the reason that he comes into the future is because... He is friends with a person who he didn't know was Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
And Jack the Ripper kills some people and he's going to get caught. So he takes H.G. Wells' time machine into the future.
Yeah.
So H.G. Wells has to chase him into 1979 to make sure he doesn't kill people
in 1979. Now, the weird thing about the movie is that the Jack the Ripper steals the time machine, takes it to the 1970s, and then... I guess somehow it gets returned back to the
1800s. Well, okay, they do explain that.
All right.
And the whole, because the beginning of the movie, it's set, it's 1893.
It had a return setting on it, I think.
Yes.
Right, that's right.
The beginning of the movie is set in 1893, and H.G. Wells is having a get-together where he's going to show his little, stiff upper lip Victorian buddies that he really, for real, invented a time machine.
And this is Malcolm McDowell at his best.
And
he nails H.G. Wells.
I really, really love his character in this.
Yeah.
And the funniest thing about this is, do you know what the movie was that he made right before this one?
What's that?
Caligula.
Oh, Caligula. Right.
And that's why he took this role, because he wanted something totally different
night
from Caligula. Because I feel like up to now, because he was Alex in A Clockwork Orange, he was an Oh Lucky Man. Like, he always kind of played those types of characters, so he wanted to do something totally different.
I'd like to get Caligula. I haven't seen that in a long time.
That was a
weird flick.
Yeah. It's like...
Okay.
It's hard to watch, though, I gotta say. It's kind of yucky.
Yeah.
But, so he shows them the time machine, and of course they don't believe it and stuff like that. Although, David Warner... I love David Warner, by the way.
Yeah.
He plays Dr. John Leslie Stevenson, a.k.a. Jack the Ripper, although no one knows that at this point. But he is very interested. Oh, a time machine. It actually works, huh? And stuff like that. But H.G. Wells explains how the time machine works, which is coincidentally why Jack the Ripper takes off in it. But it has a little key.
Yeah.
And this is the non-return key.
Okay, yeah.
So you can use the time machine without the key in it.
Mm.
But if you use it without the key, then the machine will return to its point of origin.
Right.
Right.
Like a safety.
Yeah. So that's how that happens. And then right. He also explains, too, that there is another mechanism that it is possible to travel without the machine, but you will not be able to come back.
Okay.
And that becomes important later.
Okay.
But so, yeah, what ends up happening is that, so they're having this little get together and he's showing them the time machine and they're all like, whatever, ha ha ha.
Yeah, they don't think it works.
The way they do and stuff. But then the cops come to the door and be like, hey, you know, a prostitute got killed. We think it's Jack the Ripper or something like that. Even though I should note that this movie is set in 1893, which is about 5 years after the Ripper murders happened.
Right.
But it's still possible that he could have been running around. So, you know, close enough. And so the cops come and stuff, and then they find David Warner's, I keep calling him David Warner, John Leslie Stevenson is his character's name. They find his medical bag, and there's all these bloody gloves in it and stuff, and they're like, oh, well, he must be the Ripper. Where did he go?
Right.
And then H.G. Wells goes down to the cellar, and he's like, fuck me.
Yeah.
Got in my time machine.
And the time machine
And then
back.
The time machine comes back, and he's like, man, where'd that bitch go?
Right.
So then he has to get in the time machine and he goes to 1979.
Yeah, how does he know the date? Was the date
It was
written?
On there, yeah.
It was on there?
Yeah, like if you look...
It had like little... I remember it had numbers on there that spun, like on a dial.
Yeah, it's very steampunk.
Tumblers, I think
it's very steampunk before anyone knew what steampunk was.
Yeah.
And I really like... I gotta say, I really like the design of the time machine with like all the colored lights and shit like that on the side.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to the one from the actual movie, The Time Machine, which was based on the H.G. Wells book. Okay, so the thing I love about this movie, it could have gone in kind of a zany direction because you do have that fish out of water element of H.G. Wells going into 1979. You know, he sees a woman walking down the street in like fucking saran wrap pants.
Yeah.
You know, he eats in a McDonald's.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. And it is kind of played for laughs, but not in a way that's like, oh, look at this idiot, like coming in.
Yeah.
He's
walking around in this old fashioned suit. People are kind of looking at him, kind of funny. And he goes into, one time I remember he had some jewels.
Yeah.
And he wanted to trade them at a jeweler for cash.
Yeah.
For
well, he went to
cash.
A pawn shop.
Went to a pawn shop, that's what it was. And he noticed that the guy had tattoos of numbers on his arms. And he's like, what's that? You know, and he says, oh, that was from the concentration camps during the war.
Well, he doesn't actually...
Like, he says, World War, remember that? He's like, there was a World War?
That's not exactly what he said. He does notice the guy, the numbers, but he doesn't ask him about the numbers.
Okay.
He takes the jewels because before he left, he actually did have the presence of mind to say, you know, I'm going far in the future. They probably won't have the same kind of money. So he takes like some old jewels he had. He took his housekeeper's earrings, things like that. He said, I'll need to cash these in. Mm. So he did have that much foresight.
Yeah.
And so he goes to a pawn shop and the jeweler specifically says, I told you I've seen this movie so many times.
Yeah.
I have the shit memorized. The jeweler specifically says, I haven't seen stones in settings like this since before the war.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, at which point H.G. Wells goes, war? What are you talking? He's like, yeah, since World War II. World War?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, World War II. And he's like, oh my God, the Second World War. Because it should be noted that H.G. Wells, his character, is very into, I mean, he was kind of like a futurist. He was, he thought that the future would be a utopia.
Yeah. H.G. Wells himself was kind of like similar to almost like a British Fabian socialist.
Yeah.
All right. Which was kind of like a utopianist. He thought that the future would be perfect, and when he gets to the 70s, he finds out it wasn't. But what was cool is that Jack the Ripper gets to the 70s, and he's like, oh, yeah, I was right, basically. He was like, this world was made for me. I was a man ahead of my time.
Yeah,
that was the
which
way
I liked
it.
That dynamic.
That was really cool, yeah.
Like, even though it's clear that H.G. Wells is the good guy and Jack the Ripper is the bad guy, obviously... There's kind of like some interesting, it's kind of like almost a little bit edgy kind of because it's saying that H.G. Wells' optimism about the future was misplaced.
Was bullshit. Yeah. And,
right.
And that Jack the Ripper's dissatisfaction with the past was justified because he gets H.G. Wells into a room and shows him television And on the television, he goes, look at all this violence, look at all this warfare and all this murder, you know,
yeah.
on television. What I enjoy, they just love it. They use it as entertainment.
Yeah.
He goes,
the famous quote that he says, and he's like, 90 years ago, I was a freak.
Yeah.
Now I'm an amateur.
That's right.
Because he's showing, you know, like war atrocities and stuff like that. So, like I said, the thing about the movie is that I don't think either of them are right, really. It's just that...
It's just interpretation.
It's just how they interpret it. Yeah. Jack the Ripper sees the violence.
Yeah.
But it as it ends up, H.G. Wells sees that too, and he gets a little bit disheartened. But he also finds love along the way.
Yeah.
So he sees... I think he sees... He loses his optimism, but I think he sees the future in a more balanced way.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of the same.
Yeah, yeah.
He says every age is the same. So he's not saying the future is better or worse.
No.
He's just saying it's the same as it was.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah, he interpreted, like, modern sexuality as kind of like a futuristic utopian sexuality that he was dreaming about in the 1800s.
Yeah, and
that... Oh, it's free love. You know, that's it.
Yeah, well, here's
the
funny...
That's how I remember it.
Well, no, the funny thing, too, is that, like I said, I like that they used H.G. Wells coming into the future, because H.G. Wells... Was writing about the future, and in a lot of ways, he was very ahead of his time.
Yeah.
He was a very early advocate of women's rights, for example.
Yeah.
And that kind of plays into the plot as well, because when he comes into the future, obviously... He's trying to catch Jack the Ripper and keep him from killing people because he feels responsible. Because Jack the Ripper, that was his time machine, and he was responsible for Jack the Ripper coming into this time. So when he gets there, the first thing he thinks is that, well, I had to change my jewels and stuff. So obviously, Jack the Ripper will also have to exchange his currency. So the first thing he does is he starts going around the banks asking, hey, has there been another guy who looked kind of Victorian, who had really old money and stuff like that? And it turns out that the bank, he goes to a bunch of them, but the bank he goes to where Jack the Ripper did exchange his money, the woman that is the manager of foreign currency is named Amy Robbins, and she is played by Mary Steenburgen. Fun fact, I believe that Malcolm McDowell and Mary Steenburgen met on the set of this movie and married right after this movie came out.
Huh.
So they were married for actually quite a long time, about 10, 11 years, something like that. So you can see the kind of romance that develops between them was actually real because, you know, like I said, so it ended up happening. So you can really tell there's like a lot of really good chemistry between them. But he likes the fact that Amy Robbins is a very liberated 70s woman. She is very forthright.
Yeah.
She likes H.G. Wells. She's like, ooh, I like his manner. He's very mannerly. You know, he had really cool duds. Yeah. And
handlebar mustache.
His little handlebar mustache, his little deerstalker hat and stuff like that. So she just straight up asks him out.
Yeah.
And he's kind of taken aback.
Yeah.
But he's like, man, this is cool. I like it. You know what I mean? And when they go out on a date and stuff like that, and they come back to her apartment, and she basically has to, like, jump on him because he's, like, too...
Yeah, he's trying to... Yeah, scoot
he's
off
trying
the other
to be, like...
The,
he's, like, on the other side of the couch. And then finally she just, like, fucking jumps on him.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, I don't want you to think that I'm making you do something you don't want to do. And she says the great line. She's like, my God, I'm practically raping you, she says. Which I think is very funny. But I like that he's just kind of rolls with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, I should say that the reason you might think, well, why does this whole romance develop when he should be looking for Jack the Ripper? It's because he thinks that Jack the Ripper got killed. Because they had an argument, Jack the Ripper runs out into the street and gets hit by a car, and then he gets taken away, and then so H.G. starts going to all the hospitals asking about him. Now, at the main hospital, they say, nobody came in here under the name John Leslie Stevenson, but we did have a John Doe come in, and he got hit by a car, and he died.
Yeah.
So for a while, H.G. Wells thinks that he's dead and he thinks everything's okay. So he can kind of, but then prostitutes start turning up dead and he realizes that he's still alive. And so he has to go find him. So there comes a point where he has to tell Amy that he came here in a time machine because the Ripper he finds out about her.
Yeah.
That she's the one that told H.G. where Jack Ripper was because, you know, that it was the whole thing with the money exchange. And so he begins to target her. Okay, so obviously at first she does not believe him because why would you?
Yeah.
You know, he's like, yeah, I'm actually from 1893 and
I'm H.G.
Wells. So she thinks he's a nut and stuff like that. So you go, okay, I'll prove it to you. Now, I should note too that the reason that he actually turned up in San Francisco.
Yeah.
In 1979. And the reason that he turned up in San Francisco is because in 1979, there was a museum in San Francisco that was having, you know, a retrospective of H.G. Wells, and the time machine was in this museum.
So that's how it got moved
there. That's why he didn't turn up in London, say.
Right. It doesn't travel through space. It only travels through time. So to go to a place, the time machine has to physically be there.
Yeah.
To travel across it, I guess.
That's why. And right. Which was very funny to me when I first saw it. There's lots of little great details. Like, he gets out of the time machine and it's all roped off and stuff like that. And a little kid is like, "Mommy, who's that man?" That little kid is actually Corey Feldman. I didn't realize.
Oh, really?
He's really young. But when I saw the still, I was like, "Oh, yeah, I forgot he was in it." So, yeah, he gets out of there and stuff.
Or Corey Feldman.
Yeah. Yeah, it actually is Corey Feldman.
Yeah.
There was a great little thing where he breaks his glasses. I think it was during the journey in the time machine. And so all of the shit from his office and his lab and stuff like that are in this museum display.
Yeah.
So he kind of just sidles over to his desk and opens it, and there's spare glasses in there. And he's like, "Oh, nice."
Yeah.
He's like, "I thought I left a spare there."
I forgot about this.
So there's like all this little kind of details like that. So Amy gets targeted. She doesn't believe him when he says he's from the past and this is Jack the Ripper. So he basically has to take her to the museum. They have to hide in the museum. They have to, and he takes her 3 days into the future.
Okay.
Now, 3 days in the future, Amy is dead.
Oh.
The Ripper has killed her.
Right.
So she believes him, obviously. She flips the fuck out. And then they have to go back to 3 days previously. And they say, "Okay, we'll just try to prevent it. Because now we know when it's going to happen and where it's going to happen."
Do you want to spoil this? I don't know.
I don't know if we should. I'm just saying, so.
It's a good retrospective so far that you've given. I think it's a good teaser. And, you know, a lot of people have probably never seen this movie.
Yeah, I feel like this is a really underrated.
Very underrated.
I mean, I feel like our generation that probably got.
If you're in your 40s, you saw it over and over.
You probably did see it if you had the pay channels back in the day. Because they used to play it like endlessly, like in the early 80s.
It's a good time travel flick. It holds up. I saw it about 2 years ago and I said, "Oh man, I forgot how good this was." Do you have this on DVD?
I do not.
Maybe they have a Blu-ray edition.
That's what I mean. I'd like to add that to my
library.
Because this is one of my very, very favorite movies from childhood. Right. And, I should add, I saw this on the Wikipedia.
I also wouldn't mind getting the time machine.
I like that too.
The old British one.
Yeah. I like that movie too. Like, I like this one more because it kind of has a lot more going on in it. But, you know, the time machine movie they made from the 60s was good too. But the thing that I liked about this, and I saw this on the Wikipedia page. So Malcolm McDowell, when he knew he was going to play H.G. Wells, he actually found an old recording of H.G. Wells's voice so he could do it. So he said, I listened to it, except H.G. Wells's real voice was like super squeaky and like high pitched.
Right.
And it had like this like kind of working class British accent.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I feel like people would have laughed at the character if I had talked like that because it sounded so strange. So he said, people have a perception that H.G. Wells would have talked like with a kind of upper crusty British accent. So that's how he did it.
Right.
He's like, I didn't want him to become comical.
Because
like I said, there were like funny moments in the movie, like when him eating at McDonald's and like ordering at McDonald's and figuring it out. But I like that they didn't play it as zany as that. Like they kept H.G. very dignified. You know, he was kind of like I said, he was a little confused about some things, but because he was so ahead of his time for 1893, he kind of, you know, adapted very quickly. Although, like you said, the whole thing about Jack the Ripper, I mean, Jack the Ripper, when he came to 1979, he adapted immediately. He was already in disco clothes or not disco clothes, but, you know, like in his 70s suit.
Right.
He had the smoked sunglasses. You know, he was like his element already. So there was some conflict there, but I do like that they didn't make it like he was kind of, they didn't make H.G. like a bumbling idiot. You know, there were a few things he was confused about, but he pretty much started rolling with it almost immediately so that he could get. So it was mostly serious, but it had some funny stuff.
Well, neither one of them really had to deal with the language barrier.
True that.
They understood what was being said. So.
Yeah. Yeah, because the English is not all that different. But yeah, so if you have not seen Time After Time, you really should see it. Seriously, it's one of my favorite movies from childhood.
Yeah, hearing you talk about it again makes
me
want to see it.
I can watch it over and over and over again, and I never get tired of it. Like I said, there is some... It's not super gory. There's like a little bit of gore in it.
By now, you'd think there'd be a 25-year anniversary Blu-ray for the
place. There probably is. Yeah. I should probably look around, but because this is one movie, like I said, that I never get tired of watching.
I sometimes would confuse it with one called Somewhere in Time, which
that
had
Christopher Reeve
trying to go back in time to meet some girl he saw in a photograph.
Yeah, I only saw that one.
He
time.
Did it by willpower.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen that one in a while too. I remember that one being pretty good.
Yeah, I only saw it once, but I remember it being okay too. But like
I think it was more of a chick flick though, from what I remember.
Which is weird because you don't usually like those.
Well, I was a little kid.
Oh, okay.
But just the idea of just like wishing yourself to go backwards in time.
Yeah. I wonder, is that based on a Jack Finney novel? Because that sounds like something that Jack Finney would write.
I'd see it again.
About people that go back in time. He wrote a bunch of novels, but he also wrote a bunch of Twilight Zone episodes, and they were all about going back to some idyllic past.
It wasn't just a romance movie. He does something, you know, he goes backwards in time and something happens. You know what I mean? But I don't really remember everything about it. I remember associates thinking it was as good as, say, like The Elephant Man.
Okay.
But not as depressing.
Yeah, The Elephant Man.
I like The Elephant Man.
I did too, but it's all from around the same time. But yeah, so yeah, Time After Time, I definitely recommend it. All the acting is fantastic in it. The Mary Steenburgen is great in it. David Warner makes a great Jack the Ripper. Because he's kind of likable, even though he's horrible.
Yeah, he's just a good villain.
Yeah, he's real slick, but he makes a good villain. And so good acting all around, just a really good story. It's just a great premise. I hope they don't remake it, although I'm surprised that they haven't by now. But actually, I should mention that they did do, last year, they made a TV series based on it.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
I think it was ABC, I want to say.
Wonder if it was any good.
Well, it got real mixed reviews, and it got canceled after only 5 episodes
aired. Reviews doesn't mean anything anymore, because
it didn't get a lot of viewers, because they made 12 episodes, but only 5 aired, and then they canceled it.
Oh, okay.
I read the plot synopses just real quick on Wikipedia. It looked like what they did was the first episode that was pretty much the movie, like what happened in the movie, and then it kind of went off on
different tangents.
It continued the story, because, well, I was going to say, I guess the end wouldn't have been the same, because I'm not going to spoil the ending of the movie, but, you know, it didn't have that kind of thing happening. But yeah, so I have not seen the TV series, and it was just last year, it was 2016, but I heard it wasn't that great. Like, it really didn't get very good reviews and got canceled. But yeah, so I kind of hope they don't, because this one has a real charm to it that I don't think they could replicate.
Right.
You know, and like I said, the 79 setting was kind of so important to the way the story was. You know, so I don't think they could really redo that in the same kind of way. It would just,
you'd just
be a
have
different
to reboot.
Film.
You'd have to reboot it to a different film.
Yeah, you definitely would. But yeah, I definitely recommend this movie if you like that kind of thing. And like I said, one of my favorites from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll probably do it for this movie review.
Yeah.
Be sure to tune into our regular show on Tuesday and keep an eye out for more movie reviews, which I usually post around the weekend sometime. I don't usually have a schedule for posting them. But other than that, we will see you next time. Bye.